Welcome to the Strong Mama Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole, mom, exercise physiologist, and pre- and postnatal fitness expert. This show is all about helping you navigate your pregnancy and postpartum journey with more strength, energy, and ease. Each week, pull up a seat for a new topic that will empower you to feel strong, capable, and confident while supporting your body through all the changes of the motherhood journey. Just a reminder that the information on this show is not meant to treat or diagnose any medical condition. Please speak to your medical provider for all things related to your healthcare. I'm honored and excited to be a part of your health journey into motherhood. Now let's dive into today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Strong Mama Podcast. Super excited about today's episode, all about preparing for a safer childbirth. Today we have Gina Mundy on the podcast. She is an attorney that specializes in childbirth cases. For over two decades, she has analyzed the mistakes that are made during labor and delivery. Drawing on this knowledge, she has authored the book, A Parent's Guide to a Safer Childbirth, to help parents prevent these mistakes and have a healthy baby. Rather than merely getting involved after an unfortunate mistake was made, Gina has taken a proactive approach by getting involved before childbirth. So she has spent thousands of hours scrutinizing cases, conducting interviews with delivery teams to gain an in-depth understanding of every decision made during labor and delivery. So today's conversation is all about empowering you with knowledge, because knowledge is power when it comes to childbirth. And so often we go into birth uninformed. And that is, information is really the key to having that safer childbirth and giving you the best outcome possible. So we are very excited to have Gina with us today. Welcome to the podcast, Gina. Please introduce yourself to our listeners. Give us a little peek into who you are and what you do.
Thank you, Nicole, for having me. I am super excited about our conversation today. So I live in Michigan. I'm north of Detroit, probably about an hour. I have three kids. My kids are, my first two are girls. They're 19 and 15, fun ages. And then I have my little man. He's 9 years old. I've been married 21 years. And then I've also been an attorney specializing in childbirth cases for 21 years. But I always say that, like that, because when I graduated law school and I got my first job, as an attorney specializing in these cases, I had no idea that this profession existed. But as I had gotten married, I wanted to make sure, you know, what I was seeing in these cases didn't happen during the birth of my kids. So I stuck with it to kind of learn about it. And then to this day, 21 years later, it's what I'm doing. But just so your audience understands what a childbirth case is, these are cases that involve the birth of a baby and something goes wrong, whether it's a mistake or a complication, baby is not born healthy, or baby may pass away during childbirth. Sometimes mom will pass away during childbirth. So as the attorney on the case, I come in after the birth of the baby to find out what happened, what went wrong, why, more importantly, what should have been done so baby would have been born healthy or mom around to raise her baby. Those questions have taken me all over the United States many times, meeting different delivery teams, experts, basically hashing out every aspect of labor and delivery. And, you know, the medical professionals and the delivery teams, you know, they get to see the good and the bad. Me and my profession, unfortunately, I just see the bad. And then I have to sit and analyze the bad for years. These cases take years to get through the system. So I basically, after 19 years, I took that knowledge and I took that information that I had learned from these cases, and I wrote a book to expecting parents to help them have a safer childbirth, to help them have a healthy baby and avoid these mistakes and complications that I have seen now for 21 years. So the book was published June 2023. And, you know, like you said in the introduction, basically, instead of getting involved in the aftermath of something going wrong, I'm trying to get involved beforehand to, you know, help parents. Because I'll tell you, the hardest part of my job as, you know, a mom, a wife, a human, is the day I sit down with the families and I talk about the day, you know, their baby was born, or the day they lost their wife or mom. And it's always weighed really heavily on me. So hopefully my book then will help spare other families from, you know, what I've seen the families from the cases endure over the years.
Wow. Yeah, that just gave me goosebumps because I can't imagine like being in the shoes of, you know, any of those families, and also like your shoes as well, to just experience that and kind of go along on that ride and experience so much of that sort of negative stuff that, you know, we don't have in our vision, right? We don't have that in our vision for our birth. And so being informed of a lot of these things, is there anything else aside from that, any specific events that really fueled you in writing this book and fueled kind of your mission for writing it?
100%. It's the introduction to the book. Basically, my niece, she was pregnant, and then during the birth of her baby, so my niece, just so everyone understands, is my sister's daughter. She was about to give birth to the first baby of our next generation. So everybody was on edge. Everybody was excited. That day I was 1,100 miles from the hospital, but I had been informed on what was going on during her labor. And then March 17th, it was about 5 o'clock, 2021. I was in my kitchen and my phone rang. So of course my kids ran over because they wanted to hear the good news about cousin Sam and her baby. And instead it was just one of those moments you will never, ever forget. And I picked up the phone, and instead of hearing the good news about Sam, it was my sister screaming hysterically and crying that the baby crashed. And I have, obviously, from what I do, I know those words, and the families, that's what they go through. And those are the words they repeat to me, you know, over the last 21 years. So I ran outside and I'm listening to my sister cry, and I'm doing, of course, my attorney analysis, because that's default, right? This is what I've done for 21 or 19 years at that point. And I'm doing my attorney analysis. But as I sat and I listened to her cry, you know, I just went from this attorney analysis to almost like this human analysis, where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is how the families feel. For 19 years at that point, they've always described this transitional period where they have life before baby and life after baby. And that moment they find out, and the knowing, you know, there's no decision now that will change the past, and you just hope and you pray. And I'm like, are we going through that right now? And we were lucky. We got news sometime later that the baby was going to be okay. And today the baby is healthy and everything's okay. But that night and that weekend, that moment just stuck with me. And it was just one of just stops you in your tracks when it happens to you. And, you know, I realized that, you know, my kids are older. I'm, you know, what if I'm 1,100 miles away, you know, when my kids have their babies? Because I'll tell you, how I would prepare my family and my kids for childbirth is completely different than how a normal family would prepare. So I started to write down everything that I had learned from these cases, because unfortunately, there are reoccurring facts, there are reoccurring issues. And if people know this, it'll give them a heightened sense of awareness, help activate their intuition, and help them make good decisions, because the families in these cases are one decision or minutes from a healthy baby. So as I wrote, and it just all came, it was like this flood of information. I had no idea it was even in my brain. And I realized as I was writing that this is information that not only will help my kids have a healthy baby, but literally families around the world.
Yeah. So it sounds like you had that firsthand experience, and that was really your like big driver aside from all these additional cases as well. So glad that the baby is great and healthy now, but that's super scary. Now what are, and I don't want to like, I just want to kind of inform and like paint the picture, but what are some of the most common problems that might occur during childbirth that we should just kind of have awareness of, not thinking, you know, I don't want to bring the entire conversation down and be like, this is going to happen to you, but like, just from an awareness standpoint, what are some things we should be aware of that could, you know, could happen or result in a childbirth case as you speak?
Oh, no. And that's, I love that question. It's a great question. And, you know, I just want to put it out there. My book's not about what can go wrong, but how to make sure it goes right. So it's a very preventative book. You know, I may say something in the book, or I may have a chapter on the book and say, okay, everybody needs to know this. Just trust me, you need to know it. I might not tell you why, but it is extremely important. I do, you know, I spent 14 months and thousands of hours on this book, but part of it was also crafting it in a way that it will help expecting parents, not, you know, instill like scare them or anything like that. Because the worst thing that could happen with this information is that a parent doesn't read it and something happens to their baby. So I even had 6 pregnant beta readers go through my book. So a beta reader reads your book before it's published and answers questions. So I had 6 of them read the book. And my number one question is, this book scary in any way, shape, or form? And they universally were like, no, not at all, Gina. And I'm like, okay, perfect. But anyway, let's get to, so chapter 11 goes over the 10 most common issues and facts in a legal baby case. The first one, by far, number one most common fact in my cases is the drug Pitocin. Pitocin is the drug that is used to induce mom's labor by making the uterus contract. So basically, if I get a new case in, it typically starts with mom is being induced with Pitocin. Mom's labor is being augmented with Pitocin, whichever it, you know, it may be. And so, you know, I identify that issue, but then I go ahead and I tell you, okay, listen, I've seen these cases. I've analyzed this drug. I've traveled the country talking about this drug, researched this drug. I mean, you name it, with Pitocin. So then I wrote a chapter on, okay, here's how you have a safe Pitocin induction. Chapter 14 of the book. And I recommend that even if you are listening to this podcast and you are like, no way, I don't want a Pitocin induction, that you still have an understanding of Pitocin and you still have an understanding that if you do need it during your labor, how your doctor is going to order it. And that's something you can talk to your doctor about during pregnancy. Because like in the introduction to the book, my niece's case, she just went to the hospital. They had actually called me and they had said, you know, she wasn't feeling good or whatever. And they, it's all in the book. But I'm like, you know what? Just get her to the hospital and get her on the monitor. I want to see how the baby's doing. So they did. And there, you know, they put the baby on the monitor and there were concerns about the baby. So my niece, she wanted a spontaneous vaginal birth, which I agree with. That is by far the safest way to have a baby is, you know, no, skip the drugs. Because I will tell you, spontaneous vaginal birth, those cases are few and far between. In those cases, that there's less chance of there being a mistake or complication. So that's what she had, that's what she wanted to do, except that she checked, you know, she went into the hospital, there were concerns about baby. Now she was left with 2 options, C-section, Pitocin induction, and she really didn't know much about either one. So anyway, obviously she had me on the other, you know, they had me that they could call and whatnot. And so, you know, I tried to do my best 1,100 miles away again. But anyway, so understanding the drug and understanding Pitocin is just so incredibly important because, again, when there's mistakes and complication that's reached to the level that it, you know, injures baby or something happens to baby or even sometimes mom, that's when it happens. Number 2, this one is extremely important. And, you know, I get asked a lot of times, like, why is this information just coming out? But, you know, I just don't think a childbirth attorney ever thought to write a book. But number 2, most mistakes, complications occur after mom's water breaks. So if your doctor recommends breaking your bag of water, it is incredibly important to ask, is there a medical reason or do you want to be home for dinner? Because I've heard both. But what happens is baby is housed inside the uterus with the placenta, which is like a leech stuck to the uterus. And then the baby's lifeline from the placenta to the belly button is the umbilical cord. And the umbilical cord carries oxygen to the baby. And then in that environment, you have the fluid. Baby, your baby basically lives underwater until baby comes out. So then you have the fluid. And basically, when that fluid drains out, it changes the environment in the uterus. And your uterus is inside you. So how that changes, sometimes they don't really know. So it's very important, I always like to, until you have to, keep that water in, keep the baby's environment, you know, as is, as long as possible. I mean, obviously listen to your doctor, but I do know that once that water comes out, the baby's environment changes, and sometimes the baby becomes more vulnerable to something happening. Number three, a busy labor and delivery unit. So I'll sit down with a delivery team in a case, and they continually tell me, oh, I remember that day. It was really busy. And it makes sense, right? I mean, just think about it common sense wise. If you have one of those busy days, you're moving at the speed of light, you know, you tend to overlook, skip something. You don't mean to. You're trying your best. You're focused. You're doing whatever. But, you know, we're just humans. We can only do so much. So when you have a busy labor and delivery unit, then you have a delivery team. They're running hard. They're running thin. And, you know, basically, its eyes are off the prize. So, again, I may identify that, but I'm like, okay, so basically, you need a second set of eyes on you and baby. So I think chapter seven, the baby advocate. So you need a baby advocate. And that could be your husband, a grandma, a doula, you know, really could be anybody. And, you know, and then in that chapter, I'm like, okay, these are the five things that, you know, baby advocate should understand and know. And then this way, if the delivery team gets busy and they're, you know, off with other patients, you have somebody that's kind of watching you guys, can go get the delivery team and whatnot. Because here's the deal with the delivery team. It's almost like a triage in the sense that they're going to go to the patient who needs the most attention. So if they know that you or your baby need attention and that something's wrong, they're going to go to you versus the mom who is stalled out in labor and her baby's fine. So, but they don't, as long as they know that. So it's, you know, it's having that second set of eyes on you, and that will really help help out, basically almost like work with your delivery team. So those are probably like the top three. There's other ones. There's simple like shift changes. Things seem to go wrong during shift changes. And again, you know, one's getting off, one's getting on, new set of eyes and whatnot. But yeah, there's definitely some good information in that chapter. Again, all parents should listen to, because again, heightened sense of awareness, activate your intuition, because you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm. Those are all really good points that I wish that I had your book and all this information before my first pregnancy, because definitely had an induction, the Pitocin, and it did not go to plan. Everything's fine. Everybody's fine. It just, yeah, I wish I would have known about a lot of things that I know now, and that I still probably don't know to a depth. So mamas, listen closely and definitely read the book. But yeah, super good points. Now, I love that too, that you don't take it from a fear-based place, because I think this topic can easily get really scary, and that's not what we're here to do. And I'm glad that you kind of reframed that question into things that we really need to just like be aware of and learn more about. Are there any specific actions that come to mind as we sort of move into the how? Like, we kind of have a really good picture of some of the common like mistakes, that, you know, the high level overview of that. Now, what are some action steps we can take to prevent the bad things from happening, to set ourselves up for success? Anything that you haven't mentioned yet?
Oh yeah, there's a bunch. So action steps, I would really kind of relate that to the lessons from the baby cases. So chapter one goes through all of the lessons from the baby cases as a lesson we can learn from it to prevent it from happening in the future. So what I did then is I took each lesson from the baby cases, which each lesson's laid out chapter one, and then each lesson is a subsequent chapter. So actionable steps. Number one, you must learn about childbirth. As I said earlier in the podcast, families are one decision or minutes from a healthy baby. It is so incredibly important that there are good decisions made during childbirth. And keep in mind, as mom in labor, you are the decision maker. I don't know how your doctor talks to you, but if they talk to you like they're telling you something, in actuality, it's a recommendation. Your delivery team are made up of basically, they're like your medical advisors. You make the decisions. And any, like life, are you going to make better decisions when you know about something or when you don't know about something? So just keep that in mind. And then not only that, I mean, especially like things like if you're undergoing a Pitocin induction, you have to have an idea of Pitocin. You have to have an idea of, okay, if there's concerns about your baby, what does that mean? So, and what that does too is, you know, your delivery team, it allows more streamlined communication. They don't have to explain every single detail to you. So you understand. So that way, when you're having this communication, if you don't know anything, the important details are likely going to be swallowed up in the smaller details because you're kind of starting from square one. Not only that, when you go into labor, you enter a different state of mind. So getting ready ahead of time, it's so incredibly important. When you get ready in the comfort of your own home, you're listening to great podcasts like this one, you're reading books, you're calling people, talking to people, and just, again, getting ready for that big day. So lesson one, prepare for childbirth. But again, it's me. I'm not going to leave it at that. So you go to chapter two. Chapter two is going to be all the information that I find important about childbirth. So if I'm looking at a case and I'm like, okay, I get a new case in and I want to know or want to analyze, I should say, is this good care or bad care? Chapter two, those are the facts that I rely on to kind of come up with these opinions. So, you know, they are super important facts and they're not going to be probably things that you learn in other pregnancy books, but definitely are critically important to, you know, building your foundation to make those good decisions to help you have a healthy baby. So that's like there's actionable step number one, similar to a lesson. Another thing that you must understand before you go into labor is your delivery team. Your delivery team is responsible for bringing your baby safely into this world. In a case, it is their care that is at issue and analyzed more than any other aspect of the case. Meaning when I have a case, and I told you I analyzed these cases and mistakes for 2 years, it's the delivery team's care that I sit in every decision. You know, obviously that's a little extreme. You're not going to be doing that. But you must have an understanding of your delivery team. But heads up, your delivery team is typically the people who are scheduled to work that day. So there's definitely things that you need to have an understanding of before you walk into the hospital. Now, your doctor heads your delivery team, him or her or the partners in their firm. That's the one person you get to pick. And that's great, except they're not really at the hospital, which to this day still boggles my mind, by the way. The head of the delivery team is too busy to be at the hospital. Next to your bedside is going to be your nurse or resident, you know, maybe a midwife or something of that nature. So your doctor, unless he's picking up a 12-hour shift, stopping in to check on you for some reason, you're not really going to see him. So it's very important that you pick the good doctor. And chapter four, I go through how to pick the good doctor because as part of my job, I've had to analyze OBGYNs, the doctors who deliver babies, for 21 years. Basically, you can't put a bad doctor in front of a jury. You will get pummeled. So very, very important in my profession that, you know, we scope out and pick those, you know, who are those good doctors and who are not. So I put my analysis in, but then I'm like, okay, moms, you're gonna have to do your own analysis, especially during your pregnancy. Cause you know that you're still level-headed, everything's good. But you want to make sure that the doctor has things like really good communication, because if you don't feel like you can ask your doctor something, tell your doctor something, you feel like you're wasting their time, they're not giving you the time you need, those are red flags. You should be able to have open, candid conversations and whatnot, because listen, as I said, they're not at the hospital with your delivery team. If there's concern about you, or maybe they want to change the, you know, the plan or whatever, they have to talk to your doctor. They have to call your doctor. So I can tell you right now, if your doctor does not have good communication with you, they're likely not going to have good communication with your delivery team. So there's just, I mean, so it's not just warm, fuzzy feeling when you talk to your doctor, but, you know, during childbirth, if they don't know how to effectively communicate with the delivery team, you know, that's when problems and issues, they do occur. So anyway, I go through all that. Keep in mind with doctors, good reputation does not equate to good care. That it's so incredibly important. I talk about, I have a section in there about the Yoda imposter. That's really good that you can take, that's information you can take and learn about for any doctors in your life or your baby's doctors. But again, so actionable steps, understanding your delivery team, three, picking your good doctor. Also have a plan. So listen, I'm the childbirth attorney. I have a different spin on birth plans. It's not the plan in and of itself. It's the act of preparing the plan. That's what's important, because labor is very unpredictable, which is why you need a plan, because you need to be able to pivot and marinate in the different decisions that you may have to make before childbirth, before you go into that, you know, different state of mind. So I go through, you know, definitely things that you want to consider. Now, I don't go into the different kind of scents that you may want to, or candles or music or anything like that. However, if that's what you need to relax, then great. Have that as part of your plan. Pick all that stuff. Mine's going to be probably those decisions that are more, you know, life-saving. Like, you know, I go through, you know, what kind of fetal monitor do you want? If you want a Pitocin induction, you know, you have questions about that. There's some other epidurals, some other things that I go through that I'm like, okay, we need to consider these and whatnot. So having a plan is huge. Now, listen, if you don't want to give it to your delivery team, sure, whatever. If you want to give it to your delivery team, probably a good idea. There are people scheduled to work that day who don't know anything about you. This might put them, you know, give them some information to help. Help kind of we're all work together and make sure you guys are on the same page. So, but again, whatever, it's the act of preparing it. And then we've already been through this actionable step, having a baby advocate. And by the way, I really do like doulas. Doulas are not in childbirth cases. I've never had a doula in a childbirth case. And we have a lot of doulas around here. So that tells me that doulas are helping to bring babies safely into this world. I will tell you, for the birth of my grandkids, we will have doulas. Huge fan of doulas. But again, if you don't want to do a doula, I tell, and you're like, husband, you're on it. You know, sometimes husbands just need a direction and they will do it. They're really good. If you point them in the right direction, they're really good at being like, I got this. And I'll tell you, any husband that reads my book will know how to bring his baby and his wife home safely at the end of the day. Okay, this one's huge. This is the actionable step that is so incredibly important. The medical community, I say this in the book, the medical community, it just seems like they want to keep it to themselves. So I have taken the stance as the childbirth attorney saying, no, there's no reason parents should not know this. But anyway, if you mention this to your doctor or nurse, depending on who they are, they may look like they saw a ghost if you tell them that you know how to read your baby's heart rate. So I have a whole entire chapter on basically how to read your baby's heart rate. Why? Because let me tell you, the medical community is like, oh my goodness. Listen, I've had doctors testify. I included it in the book. The only way a baby can talk to me during labor is through their heart rate. That means if you understand your baby's heart rate, if your baby advocate understands your baby's heart rate, they can talk to you during labor. During something like a Pitocin induction, don't you want to be able to understand what your baby is saying through their heart rate? Listen, as a childbirth attorney, the first thing I learned how to do was read a baby's heart rate. When I get a new case in, I'm still a partner in a law firm. I get a new case in, I don't even look at the records. I look at the baby's heart rate. It took me an hour to learn about how to read a baby's heart rate. This is so incredibly important. It is the basis of so many decisions that are made during labor and delivery. I cannot stress enough how parents need to understand their baby's heart rate. And again, all of the doctors, not so much the nurses, the doctors, they're indoctrinated. Mind you, not, I am their attorney. But you know, they're indoctrinated to think this is information that is just for the medical experts. Screw that. So, and I probably shouldn't say that. You might want to edit it out or leave it in. Don't care. like not
You're
sure
fine.
About your audience.
You're fine.
Okay. All right. So, and I say that. So if you're in a Pitocin induction and there are concerns about your baby, again, it's going to be the baby's heart rate that tells you baby is not liking the Pitocin induction. So baby's heart rate will then tell your delivery team, okay, we may need to turn the Pitocin down. We may need to turn the Pitocin off. And then what happens is if there's a concern about the baby, it always starts with their heart rate. It's why the first thing they do when you walk into a labor and delivery unit is they put the fetal monitor on to see how your baby is doing. But they don't go. So if there's a concern on the baby's heart rate, it's not concern on the baby's heart rate, C-section. No, no, no. It's a process. So you have concerns about the baby's heart rate, if there is any. And then they're going to recommend some tests and interventions because, again, baby's inside you. It's hard to see what's going on inside you. They may know something's wrong, but they may not know why. So they may do some other tests and interventions to see what else is going on. That's chapter 10 of my book, understanding those tests and interventions. So if they are done during your labor, you already understand what they are. And that's going to help, again, streamline communication, help you make those good decisions and whatnot, because based upon those tests and interventions, they may recommend, you know, that a different course of action. So it's really important to understand that. And so anyway, but yeah, baby's heart rate, incredibly important. And especially, you know, I'm on a lot of shows, but the last couple of weeks, I've been just jumping up and down. I'm like, you know what? No, bring it on, medical community. I'm telling the parents to learn about it. I wrote a chapter on how to read a baby's heart rate. So in my book, it will tell you everything you need to know. And if you've never done it, so I have graphs and I have everything else, but you know, just get up there, have an understanding of it, have your baby advocate have an understanding of it. Doulas know how to read baby's heart rates because they're so important. But when you get there, you know, your nurse be like, okay, this is the graph. So this is the baby's heart rate. You know, the nurse will just kind of give you like a quick course on, okay, yep, this is variability. This is the decel, you know, or whatever they're seeing, they'll be able to explain it to you. But that lesson is just by far one of the most important lessons. And I'll tell you, in my cases, it is the baby's heart rate that is such a big issue in the cases. So very mm-hmm. important for parents to understand. Test interventions, chapter 11, obviously, understanding the common facts and issues, huge action step. And then again, in that chapter, it's here's an issue, here's how to fix it, make sure it doesn't happen during your labor. And then I have just a couple more chapters on epidurals, making sure if you're going to use one, that it's, you know, a safe process. And I do have my C-section chapter. Talk a little bit about that. That's an interesting chapter for sure, especially in a situation kind of like my niece, where there were concerns about the baby when she got to the hospital and they offered, you know, they were like, okay, you're not in labor, so you're C-section or Pitocin. Those are huge decisions and there's certain factors that you need to take into consideration. For instance, if they're offering you a C-section and a Pitocin induction, but you look around and the unit is jammed, you're in an extra room, you know, you might be like, busy labor and delivery unit. And then you might be like, oh, okay, let's see. I'm really not a fan of this delivery team. So, you know, it's really, there's definitely things to consider that I go through in that chapter. And then the last, you know, thing we've talked about, the last lesson is basically Pitocin is the number one most common factor in a legal baby case. That's literally a lesson in and of itself. So again, the actionable step is learning how to have a safe Pitocin induction.
Wow. You just answered like most of the questions that I had for you. But I do have some follow-ups because that is all such good information. I love that we talked about the delivery team, the birth plan. So I do want to go back to the birth plan for a second. In terms of, I know there's some people that say like, be flexible because you can't control your birth. And others are like, have a birth plan. So how do we mesh those two to like, stay flexible with the way your birth is going, but to make sure it's, you know, you're hitting your key points? Is there anything you'd really, and you mentioned a few things when you were talking about that, but how in depth does this birth plan need to be?
So, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people call them birth preferences because they do change so fast. So I write down, you know, these are the different things that you need to consider. And, you know, even like vacuum versus forceps. So in my world, that's an incredibly important decision. And just so you understand, in Pitocin inductions, you know, if something does go wrong or a baby's not tolerating the induction, a lot of times then that's when they end in C-section, or depending on how far baby is down in the birth canal, you know, they may offer the option of vacuum forceps. And then just so your audience understands, and by the way, vacuum and forceps is called an operative vaginal delivery. Vacuum goes on the baby's head. It's like a suction and you pull down with contractions. But after three pulls, if baby's not delivered, they have to convert to C-section. So the problem with that in the cases is that with vacuum, they have popped off three times, and then that time it takes to convert to C-section is too long for baby. That's very common in the cases. So there's forceps. Forceps, seems like the older doctors are doing the forceps still. The younger doctors don't seem like they're getting trained on forceps, which kind of scares me. But forceps, here's the deal with them. They do cause vaginal trauma. However, they're way more effective in getting baby delivered. I've never had a case where they've tried forceps and not been able to deliver the baby. Vaginal trauma, yes, but they are able to pull, you know, baby out pretty quickly. But that those two are huge decisions, and or C-section. So, you know, that's something you want to talk to your doctor about, especially if you're going a Pitocin induction. You know, and again, you want to talk to your Pitocin induction during your pregnancy with your doctor. But it's basically just taking all of these birth preferences and then at the end of the day, sitting down with your doctor and kind of going over them so they can even inform you of, you know, other options, or this is what I would do. Because I'll tell you, doctors typically testify, they're either vacuum doctors or they're forceps doctors. And, you know, you're like, wait a minute. So if we do a Pitocin induction and my baby is not like in the Pitocin induction, you're going to use a vacuum. Okay. And then talk to your doctor about that and be like, okay, well, I heard Gina Mundy's podcast and I know sometimes vacuums don't work. Talk to your doctor about that. And then in your birth plan, you might want to be like, if my baby gets in trouble to where, you know, they think baby might not be getting oxygen, you know, I skip the vacuum, just do a C-section. You know, there's just different things that you can talk to your doctor about ahead of time. Now, I think I went pretty extreme on the what you can talk to your doctor about, but there's definitely things like epidurals that are important, because I'll tell you, you know, with there, and there's other options I don't think people realize with epidurals. You can get Stadol, you can get like an IV medication to help you through through those contractions, because they are really strong, especially if you're on Pitocin. But here's the deal with the plan. It is about looking at all these different decisions and then kind of marinating in them and then talking to your doctor about them ahead of time. I had a doctor testify, included it in the book in that chapter, the LAD, the birth plan chapter. But the doctor's like, this patients should be given all of their options before childbirth. He even went as far to say that's standard of care, like, which those are big legal words. But no, he's like, no, because, and he is the doctor that would sit and tell you all of, you know, go through everything in childbirth. Those doctors, he was amazing. And he actually just retired. So I'm sorry, mamas. But he believes by far all decisions should be made before childbirth, even those tough ones. And I'll tell you why, because that if you're in labor and you're in a different state of mind, because really you're having these strong contractions, if you don't like the pain from the contractions, you get an epidural, you're medicated, you know, you're just, they call it sometimes like a labor bubble to me. And I'm like, okay, a labor bubble. Sure. That would make sense. But you're already in this different state of mind. So what happens is if the doctor surprises you with an option and you're not familiar with that option, that element of surprise can leave you like a deer in the headlights. And it can make it to where you can't focus on what your doctor is saying. It is what it is. So that's why it's important to create a plan, consider your options, marinate in your options. What would I do? Talk to your doctor about it. Talk to your spouse, whoever your baby advocate is. You need to go over your birth plan and what you're thinking with them so they can sit and, you know, support you. But, you know, listen, this is not something you have to do in a day or two. I mean, you can take a few weeks and just marinating, just get ready, because just like anything in life, I mean, the more prepared you are, I mean, just the better it's going to go. Life can be, you know, so much about expectations. So if you prepare, you know, it's going to help you know what to expect. But again, just falling back, prepare, knowing what to expect, it's going to help you make, again, those good decisions with your delivery team and make sure your baby's born healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you have kind of made those decisions and considered the options beforehand, you don't have to think so hard in the moment, because you're right, it is all new. And when you're thrown into labor, you're having contractions, like your ability to like process the information and the risks versus benefits, we don't know, you know, mm-hmm. And I can 100% relate to that with my first. And it's not a good feeling to just not know. And so, yeah, being prepared is 100% so worth
it. Did you, out of curiosity, did you have to have like a operative vaginal delivery or C-section?
I had to have a C-section.
You did? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did they try a vacuum or anything, or just C-section?
No, I was induced before I believed that my body was ready. Mm-hmm. It was at 42 weeks and Pitocin. And it was a failure to progress. Baby's heart rate was off. I can't remember if it was high or low, but you said mm-hmm. heart rate. And I was like, yep, there was something up with this heart rate. There ended up being an infection as well. And so C-section was the way it went, but I never dilated more than like 3 centimeters. So
oh, wow.
It was, yeah, my body was, your body not, was not ready. No. And so
mm-hmm.
Hindsight's 2020. I would not have, you know, it was, I didn't know. That's what it all right. comes back to, is I didn't know. And so that's why I think the work mm-hmm. you're doing is so important. Like, I so wish I had this book 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Well, it's out now. I know. You know what? I hear that so much. And yeah. Sometimes I kick myself because, you know, I was 19 years deep into my profession. And I'll tell you, the last 5 years of it, I don't think I learned anything new, even probably the last 10 years. So, you know, I kick myself sometimes because I hear all the moms. And interestingly enough, it's always the moms that were on Pitocin. The ones mm-hmm. that had Pitocin in their labor, they're like, I just wish I would have known. Because what I've learned through going on the shows and talking to a lot of moms about Pitocin and their experience is that basically with a Pitocin induction, if you don't understand, you don't know what to expect, you know, you may still have, you know, PTSD. Like some moms have had really traumatic experiences with Pitocin. Now they have a healthy baby and that's great, but still the trauma from their Pitocin induction carries with them. And that is still, you know, that's an emotional injury, but it's, you know, it's, and I, cause I'll tell them, I'm like, oh my God, please, you know, just realize you're so lucky. And they're like, Gina, no, this is very traumatic for us. And I'm like, I never had Pitocin. So I feel for them, But again, that's why having a Pitocin induction or learning about a Pitocin induction, because even if your baby is okay in the end, there's so many moms out there who have been almost traumatized by their experience.
And you're saying that can kind of be mediated with information, you know, to some extent. Now, I know that there are a lot of moms who, you know, are potentially or expecting moms who are potentially pressured into an induction, like a Pitocin induction. And you had mentioned that at the beginning, like them kind of doing it on their schedule. Is without giving the whole chapter away, is there anything you can tell us about having a safe induction with Pitocin? Like any just like real quick, like high level overview of that?
Oh yeah. And by the way, I don't care about giving my chapter away. You're fine. No, and a lot, it's so funny because podcasts are like that. They're like, I know you don't want to give away stuff. And I'm like, no, I just want everyone to have a healthy baby, even if they never read my book. So if I have to say it on a podcast, I'll say it on a podcast. No, so basically with Pitocin, it's, so Pitocin's a very individualized drug. How you react to Pitocin or somebody else reacts to Pitocin can be completely different. If you've never been given Pitocin, nobody knows how your body is going to respond to it. So because of that, it's very important that you really take it like slow and steady, give your body time to react. So Pitocin is actually very easy to like conceptually think or understand how it's administered. Literally with Pitocin, it's like they start at 1 and they go to 20. Now, so they'll start at 1, after so long, they can go to 2. Some doctors will go up by 2. So they'll do, you know, basically 2, 4, 6, 8. Some doctors like to increase it maybe every 15 minutes, I've heard, which to me is crazy. But I'll tell you, in my book, my chapter goes through, you know, sometimes it can, depending on who it is, your body can take longer to respond to the Pitocin. So basically, my recommendation, nobody knows how you're going to react to the drug. And because the drug puts so much pressure on you and baby, I'm just, again, slow and steady, let it hit your sweet spot. And think about it. Contractions suck. They suck for mom, but not only mom, they suck for baby. Mom is lucky. Mom is on a Pitocin induction, out of control, painful contractions. Then she gets an epidural, mom's sitting pretty. Baby, not so much. So here's the deal with contractions and baby. Your uterus, when the uterus contracts, it squeezes down on the baby's environment, which is the baby, the placenta, the umbilical cord. When that squeeze happens, so you can look at the fetal monitor and you can look at, there's two graphs. The top is the baby's heart rate. The bottom is the contractions. So you see these hills that form and that's your contraction. So when you're having a contraction, that squeezes down on baby and their environment, and that temporarily stops the oxygen from flowing to baby. Nobody freak out. Babies are literally made to handle contractions. It's completely normal to stop the oxygen. However, when you have Pitocin flowing, then you have too much Pitocin flowing, that's going to make your uterus contract too much. So if your uterus keeps contracting, i.e. squeezing down on baby and continually stopping the oxygen, baby can only handle so much. And then that's when the baby starts to get into trouble. So increasing it quickly, increasing it too much, and not letting your body respond to it can be very dangerous because it can stress your baby out. And not only that, I've had cases where it stressed the uterus out, it stressed mom out. So again, very, very important. Now, they probably did. Now, so with your induction, I assume the way you talked that they had to ripen your cervix, that you weren't ready for an induction. Did they, do you remember if they used a balloon or something called Cytotec?
Yeah. Yeah, they did the interventions. Like, I feel like all of them in the book, but yes, the balloon was one.
Yeah. So they'll, what they're doing is they're prepping your cervix. They're prepping you for the Pitocin by trying to, yeah. So the balloon. So I go through, you know, when they're ripening your cervix to get you ready for Pitocin. Like I am not, you know, I go through what, like Cytotec. They use Cytotec a lot. Nurses call it Cytoblast. Nurses hate Cytotec, the ones I talk to at least. But there's stuff like that, you know, that you also need to just kind of consider, you know, talk to your doctor, say, okay, so we're going to do an elective induction at 39 weeks. And, you know, my cervix really isn't ready for it. Again, I explain what this means in the book. You know, do you guys typically do the balloon? Do you do Cytotec? Do you do Cervidil? They're just different ways to ripen your cervix. But I can tell you in my cases, when there's Pitocin and there's complications, a lot of time it's connected with the Cytotec. So I say in there that, you know, I'm not a fan of Cytotec. And I always find it very interesting that if somebody's having a VBAC, a vaginal birth after C-section, that Cytotec, which again, I'm not a fan of, they cannot use Cytotec in a VBAC. Interesting. That tells you something right there. And I believe, I think this is in the book, is it the FDA used to be like, no way, Jose, with Cytotec. Now I think they lifted it, but whatever.
Oh, so interesting. I don't
know, it's all in the book. But there's just different things. And then, like, I like nurse, like if a hospital system, you need to find out with the Pitocin induction. Does just so sometimes different hospitals, different ways they manage Pitocin inductions, but nurses, Pitocin inductions are huge and can be, you know, they're difficult. So does your nurse, can she have two patients on Pitocin or just one? I recommend finding that out ahead of time. And if you can make it happen, you just want one nurse, one patient on Pitocin.
Got it. Yeah, that's something interesting I've never thought about. I'm sure many listeners have never thought about that either. But yeah. Oh my goodness. So much stuff. I feel like we could like talk. I feel like I have so many more questions, but I'm probably going to have to grab the book too. Now, my last question for you is stuff like this covered? Like, how does this measure up? How does your book measure up to like birth courses? I think I know what your answer is based on my experience with like hospital birth courses and things like that and how much they share, but how is this different than your average like hospital birth preparation course?
So with birth courses, you know, there are some amazing doulas out there and other people who are doing birth courses. I think I have a labor and delivery nurse doing a birth course right now. And I've had a lot of people who do birth courses grabbing my book and learning from it and adding it into their birth courses. Now, the hospital-based ones, I'm not sure that great. I've never, you know, sat and analyzed them, but I've heard from other people that they're not that great. But there are some good courses out there that you can take that definitely my book, a good, you know, birthing course is, you know, would be just incredibly helpful to all parents. My book is so incredibly different from a different perspective that, you know, there's nothing out there like it. I've actually thought about doing a course just called like Safer Childbirth, where, you know, I basically then take my book to the next level. Again, trying to get that information out there, but it is so different and it's such a different perspective that you definitely, if you read my book, you definitely want to do a birthing course or something like that. Then putting them together really should help any parent, you know, as long as it's the right course. So what I'm doing, just to understand, is on my website, GinaMundy.com, I'm an expecting parents tab, and I'm putting like the Gina approved resources. And when I say Gina approved, that means I'd be comfortable with my kids going to these resources. And just trying to, because as I go on the shows, as I meet great people, as I go through their courses, I am like, this is really good. And then I keep going to the, you know, the next one. And now I'm like, wait a minute, I can put all of these on my website. That way, if somebody listens to me and, you know, they're like, okay, what is Gina talking about? Oh, okay. Here's the courses that Gina really likes, or here's the coaching, you know, and stuff like that. Cause I do think having, you know, one resource that will help families is, just absolutely huge. And again, my goal is to help families have healthy babies. So putting everything on my website, I think, is definitely a benefit.
Yeah. Thanks for pointing to those resources. Cool. Well, is there anything else you'd like to leave our audience with today that we haven't talked about so far?
Oh, I've talked a lot, but listen, you know, this is such a powerful moment and getting ready for it. I just cannot emphasize enough how important that is. If you're anything like me, you know, and I was a little girl, I was playing with baby dolls. And I remember looking at the baby dolls and just dreaming of the day I had my first baby or second baby or third baby. And just, you know, it's just such a powerful moment. You dream of it your entire life. So I know that everybody likes to go get the nursery ready, pick out the cute clothes, the stroller, and whatever. But as the childbirth attorney, I am like, get ready for childbirth, be ready to make those good decisions. Because I will tell you, getting ready and preparing will help you unequivocally bring a healthy baby into this world. One of the saddest things that, you know, I have to see in my cases, and that's where lesson one comes from, you know, it's the families, because they roll up to labor and delivery and they hope for the best. And when I talk to them in the aftermath of something going wrong, they know so much more. And I know in my heart that had they known this ahead of time, they may not have met someone like me.
Yeah, mic drop on that, and definitely take those words to heart. And also from me, take it from me as well, that I wish that I had been so much more informed. I was essentially just winging it. In the preparation part, and you're right, we, you know, we like to get all the baby gear and the nursery and all that stuff ready. There was some prep I had done, you know, the hospital courses and things like that, but it just, it didn't measure up. It didn't give me what I needed. And yeah, so definitely be prepared. All right, Gina, thank you so much. Can you tell everyone where they can learn more about your book and connect with you?
Absolutely. So my website is GinaMundy, GinaMundy.com. That will always be my go-to place where I have, you know, information for everybody. And just so your audience understands, and I've said this on a few podcasts, I'm going to be careful not to say it on too many, but if you scroll down to the bottom and it's like contact Gina, and it's like, I think it's my email, it literally just goes to my phone. So if you do need anything, or you do have questions, or you're in labor and delivery, your doctor won't listen to you, I don't know. I'm here. I want to help people. So if you need anything, please do not hesitate to reach out. Or if you read my book and you're like, that was awesome, thank you, you know, I don't care. Or if you read my book and you're like, what was that? Or what do you mean? Or elaborate on this, or, you know, whatever, please reach out. I love hearing from my readers. It always makes my day. And then if you need anything, yeah, again, scroll down, I'm there. And then my there's links on my website to my book. Right now, probably the best place to buy it is Amazon. You can go in the search bar, type in Gina Mundy. And then, just so your audience knows too, I am hopefully finishing my audiobook. I am narrating it. If I would have let someone else narrate it, it would have been out a long time ago. I'm very anal. I'm like, I'm narrating my own book. No one's reading my book to people except me. With that said, I'm almost done. So that should be an option pretty soon.
Amazing. Amazing. I also prefer when the author reads it. So I think it'll be worth your effort.
Thanks, Nicole.
Yes. All right, Gina. Well, thank you so much. Everybody go check out Gina's website. And again, thank you so much for sharing everything with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And that's a wrap, Mama. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode of the Strong Mama Podcast. If this show has served you in some way, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. Head to strongmamawellnessco.com for more free resources and opportunities for us to work together. Until next time, keep moving.